our cow Karma. We didn't even know she was pregnant. We rescued her 8 months prior. She all of a sudden went into labor. The entire cow family formed a circle around her and stayed there literally without moving for 2 hours while they watched her labor and birth and watched her, you know, lick and clean off her baby.
Wow.
They form the same exact circle when someone is passing away. They don't sit there and say, get up, please get up, you have to live. They notice that someone is passing away. They form that very same circle around them. And then the matriarch will step forward, put her head on the back of the one that's passing away, stay there for several minutes with her eyes closed, paying respects, saying goodbyes, honoring their loved one. Then she steps back into the circle, and then the next one in the circle, until every single one in that circle was able to stand, to step forward and pay the respects to the one that's passing away. And I have seen many mothers pass away and leaving their kids behind, and the family will form that exact same circle around the mourner. They don't say, get over it already. They don't say, hey, come over here and have a drink of water. They don't say, hey, just eat and forget all about it. They don't say, oh, let's just play and move on. They form that circle around the one that's grieving. They meditate with them. They sleep with them. They sit still with them. There's no words. There's no exchange. There's no negotiation. They are just simply forming a circle around them and being with them until they feel better. And it's beautiful. It's a beautiful practice. And I think us humans need a lot more of that.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Purple Stars podcast. My name is Sarah. I am your host. And our guest on the show today is the founder of the Gentle Barn Foundation. She's an amazing speaker, author, celebrated animal welfare advocate, and animal communicator. And I'm excited to be saying, please welcome back, because she's here for the second time. Please welcome Ellie Lax.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me back. It's so good to see you again.
I am so thrilled. Ellie, how have you been the last few months?
Really good. Busy and good. Really good.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, I'm always like following on Instagram, everything you're doing. And every time I'm like, wow, like you're surprising me every day when I look on Instagram. I'm like, how is it possible she's doing even more good today? And it's just, it's so beautiful to see. And to me, it's also a great inspiration to do more good and to be like, okay, every single seed counts, no matter how small and how big it is. And we never know what ripple effect it can have.
That's true. That is absolutely true.
And a big one, which will have a big ripple effect, is your latest book. It's called The Cow Hack Therapy. I pre-ordered it during after our last interview. So I was very excited when it suddenly was in my mailbox, because I didn't expect it since it was so many months later. I want to know all about it. Obviously, I read it, but I want to know, like, why cow hack therapy? What made you focus specifically on cows? And also, how does it feel to have the book finally in your hands?
Oh my God, that first day where the publisher sent me my first box of books, and I didn't know what it was. There was a box that was addressed to me, and I opened it, and all of a sudden it's this big box of my books. Oh my God, I cried, I smiled, I laughed, I did a happy dance. To hold the books in my hand, it was like, oh my God, it's real. Like all of those ideas and all of those stories and all of those late nights and weekends writing, all of those edits, and it's like, oh my God, it's real. I went through a very, very brief period of, oh God, what if people hate it? But that's just me being self-conscious. And then people started reading it and started, you know, giving me really positive feedback. So that helped my confidence.
Ellie, what do you think was the part in you that thought that people might not like it?
Well, you know, what's so cool about the Gentle Barn is we have gathered with our guests, our fans, our followers, our staff, our volunteers. They are all like carbon copies of me. So Jay and I have created like this whole village of people that are just like us. And so we have felt normal. But out in the quote unquote real world, people who are disconnected from animals, people who eat and exploit animals, people who are kind of apathetic for what animals go through. I don't know what they think of me, but I'm really excited about this book because through these stories and life lessons that these animals have for us, hopefully I can open the hearts of the people that are so far away and distant from animals, but this book can bring them closer. This book can give them experiences and feelings that perhaps they didn't have before. And this book might change their minds. So I'm really excited about it.
Ellie, I can just tell you, after our first episode, and obviously our audience are animal lovers. However, also people meeting on the street when they said, oh, you have a podcast. Who did you have on? And I remember saying, oh, last week or 2 weeks ago, we had Ellie Lex from the Gentle Barn, and every single one of them. Oh my God, we love Ellie Lex. We love the Gentle Barn. It has changed my life. It has given me so much comfort during COVID. It's so inspirational. I love following them on Instagram. I took my kids there. I took my parents there. So I think you, as much as you probably do get the feedback, it's probably just a tiny glimpse into what people really think about you in a very positive way. So I want to share that so you can really like soak it up.
Wow. Well, thank you. and also, you know, I think that life is changing. I think the world is changing. I think that people, because of social media, because there's so many sanctuaries, because more and more people have household family member, furry family members, I think more and more people are just opening themselves up to the extraordinariness of animals. And we're learning more, we're changing more, we're growing more. So it's a very exciting time to be alive.
I think so too. I've also noticed a big shift in the last years, and I would say especially since COVID. And I would personally say it actually is not because of the animals per se. I think it's because people go more inward, and the more they're connected there with themselves, the more they're able to connect to the magic of that animals have to offer. Because animals have offered magic and beauty and healing forever. It's always been there. But I think sometimes people have been rushing so much through life and have been so disconnected and distracted that they weren't even able to see it or absorb it.
I absolutely love that. I love what you just said. So the animals have been here since the beginning of time. Mm-hmm. But because the pandemic offered us a pause, we were able to kind of return to what really is important, to kind of find ourselves, find our own compassion for ourselves and for others. And then all of a sudden we were able to open up to love everyone around us, because as the adage says, you can't truly love another until you love yourself. Mm. That's beautiful, Sarah. I really love that you said that.
It is so true. It's like the amount of love we have for ourselves is then the amount of love we can offer for others. And obviously others can inspire you, whether it's animals or nature or other humans can inspire us to love ourselves more. But it's difficult to overflow from an empty cup.
I think I even wrote in my book, Cow Hug Therapy, something like, you can only offer someone water when your cup is full. I think I actually wrote that.
I love what you say. I think I wrote that somewhere. Ellie, what inspired you, or which cow whispered to you that please write an entire book focused on us and my brothers and sisters? I am so curious.
Oh my God. I mean, the list is so long of the animals that have taught me so much that I had to write this book. But here, listen, the truth is that I have spent 25 years in a barnyard and have seen the lives, the families, the rituals, and the wisdom of animals in ways that normal people don't see, right? Most of us live in cities and neighborhoods, and most of us don't have 50 cows. So I have been able to really, and also, you know, cows outside of the Gentle Barn or other sanctuaries aren't allowed to stay with their loved ones or their children or their families. And so their rituals, their tribes, their ceremonies, it's lost on our society. And I have been able to witness it from the front row. And so I thought that it was really, really important that I write this book on behalf of the animals that I've known and loved, on behalf of their wisdom, on behalf of the lessons that they have to teach us, and on behalf of who they are, so that at least the readers will know who they're meant to be and who they are and who they will be when we kind of stop doing what we're doing to them. Honestly, Buddha, who's over my right shoulder here, was my very first cow. And she's on chapter 2 when I explain how I knew that I would love cows along with all the other rest of my animals. But when Buddha arrived in my little half-acre backyard where I started the Gentle Barn 25 years ago, immediately I could see that she was extraordinary. That very first open to the public Sunday, I wasn't sure if she would be afraid, if she would want to be touched, if I had to protect her. And the group of people gathered and went into the barnyard, and instead of retreating, she immersed herself into the crowd, laid down, and beckoned them all to hug and cuddle and pet her. So I was like, wow, she's very special. But it wasn't until later that night that I realized how special she was, because I was carrying a lot of stress from the day. I was carrying a lot of responsibility for starting a nonprofit and trying to figure out all the logistics that goes with it. And I just rested against her just to say goodnight one night. And she wrapped her neck around me and held me. And I had had animals obviously want to be with me, love me, jump into my lap, follow me around. But she nurtured me like a mom. She hugged me like a mom. And it washed away the stress of the day. It made me cry. And it made me stronger for the next morning. And I remember thinking after that first hug, I'm going to need one of those every single night. And then it wasn't until a few weeks later that I realized, okay, not only do I need them every single night, but there's hurting humans all over the world that need this. And I have to start sharing Buddha with others. And so Buddha really is the creator of cow hug therapy. She's the one that showed me the healing and the nurturing that cows are capable of. And so I really dedicate my book to her and all the cows that came after who she taught. So one of the wonderful things about cows is they pass the torch. So when there's a matriarch and she knows she's getting older and more frail and she knows that her days are numbered, she actually passes the torch to another cow so that they can take care of her family while she leaves. And so Buddha came up with this cow hug therapy, and then she passed it on to Buttercup, and Buttercup passed it on to Karma. And Karma passed it on to Holy Cow, and Holy Cow passed it on to Crystal, and Crystal passed it on to Roy, because when Holy Cow passed away, we didn't have another matriarch. And then we just recently got another matriarch, and Roy is training Rosalie to step up into that capacity. They're extraordinary. So really, I write this book for Buddha and all the other cows that have shown me the absolute extraordinary tribe that they are and how much they have to teach us. And more so, I write this book for the billions of animals everywhere around the world who have no names, who have no purpose, who don't have the safety and respect and the dignity that they deserve, who are separated from their families. And it's really for them, because this book is written so that we can open the hearts of humanity for the invisible animals to be set free and acknowledged.
Ellie, I deeply resonated with what you said, that they're passing on the torch. It's something that really deeply touched my heart, because I was like imagining how that torch was passed on and passed on. And I'm so glad that you see it as the mission of your life, one of the many things you do, to give a voice to those who don't have one.
Yeah.
And I'm also so happy you have so many cow stories in this book, because I've had two amazing people from HSI International on, and both said a lot of people, you know, they feel connection to cats and also to dogs, but cows are, for example, one of the animals that are overlooked. Like, not that many people feel an instant connection to them for many, many different reasons. And I just think just even seeing the cover, it will make people fall in love with cows. And one of the cows that made me fall even more in love with them is Buttercup. I was so deeply moved when reading that chapter. I was also crying. I think I was crying for every single chapter for different reasons. Could you please introduce the wonderful Buttercup to those who haven't yet had the chance to read your book?
Yes, absolutely. Buttercup was extraordinary. I agree with you. She was a very petite yellow cow with giant dark eyes and long fluttering eyelashes and a tail that ended in ringlets. Unlike most of the cows that we rescued that are scared and run away and have a really tough beginning at the gentle barn, she walked in and she said, "Oh, finally, I'm going to be treated the way that I deserve to be." And she allowed us to love her almost right off the bat. And she turned around and loved us with her hugs, with her patience, with her gentleness, with her thoughtfulness, and with the way that she interacted, even with the smallest and tiniest of humans. She was so careful and considerate to make sure that they felt safe and that they were unharmed. We got Buttercup from a cruelty situation along with over 100 other animals. And everything was sharp on her, her sharp ribs jutting out, her sharp hips jutting out. She was so thin, emaciated, and malnourished that you could really see every bone except for her rounded belly. And I remember taking one look at her and saying, uh-oh, because a round belly with an otherwise very thin frame means that she's likely to be pregnant. And the reason why I said, uh-oh, is because she was so malnourished that we wanted all of the good nutrition we were giving her and all of the clean, fresh water we were giving her and all of the treatments we were giving her to give her sustenance. And we really preferred her not to have to share that with a life growing inside of her. But 3 months later, our fears were confirmed when she gave birth in our barn one very cold and winter night. Me and my husband, Jay, who's also the co-founder of the Gentle Barn, and our kids went down there in thick winter hats and gloves and sleeping bags, and we huddled up for warmth and watched her give birth. And by the next morning's daylight, this little calf was still unable to stand up. Calves usually stand up within an hour, maximum two, of being born. And this little teeny tiny calf, who seemed smaller than other calves than we've seen before, was unable to stand. So we got the vet to come out, and they said that he was born kind of, I don't know if they said premature, but definitely underdeveloped, with underdeveloped lungs. And thank goodness he was born at the Gentle Barn, because our staff and volunteers and all of us took turns picking him up every 2 hours, bringing him over to his mom and holding him while he nursed. So he was able to get the nutrition and he was able to be kept alive. And then a week later, he was finally able to figure out the way his legs worked. And then he had a beautiful, beautiful life with Buttercup for 7 months. So 7 months later, the Santa Clarita Valley, where the Gentle Barn is just outside Los Angeles, was ravaged by fire. Our property was spared from the flames, but we were not spared from the very thick smoke and ash that rained down on our property for several days. And we got everybody inside and we have fans and we did everything we possibly could. We consulted with veterinarians. We did everything that we could to make sure that the animals would survive this, and our staff, of course. And everyone fared very well. Finally, the smoke and ash kind of was blown away. The animals were able to return outdoors. The staffs were able to remove their bandanas from their mouths. And everybody fared well except for Buttercup's little baby, Halo. Because he was born with underdeveloped lungs, he was much more exposed to what we all had gone through, and it turned into pneumonia. And I kept looking at Halo saying, "Don't worry, you're going to make it. We have the best vets. We have the best energy healers. We have the best nutritional supplements. You're going to get some chlorella 3 times a day. You're going to be okay." And he kept looking back at me saying, "No, I'm not." And I very stubbornly, completely just refused to hear him, refused to believe him, brushed his voice away. I did not want to hear that. And I kept trying everything I possibly could. I had energy healers of all different kinds of modalities. I had several different veterinarians. We were giving him all the antibiotics and everything that we could think of. We had breathing treatments. I mean, you name it, we were doing it. And one day, a few weeks later, everything was getting worse. His fever was getting higher. His cough was getting worse. His nose was getting more runny. And at some point, the vets looked at us and said, we're going to call it. You know, he's not going to make it. And obviously, I was very upset about that, not just for Halo, but mostly for Buttercup. Buttercup was a dairy cow. Dairy cows are kept pregnant and their babies are taken away when they're born so that the breast milk could be stolen for people to drink. And so she had a lifetime of all her babies taken away. And this was supposed to be Buttercup's chance to be able to raise and keep her last baby. And I felt so angry that that possibility was being stolen from her. And so the vet said, well, you know, we'll give you one more night to kind of like come to terms with what's happening. We're going to return in the morning and help him out of his body. And Buttercup and I sat in the straw in the infirmary all night long and just watched over him and loved him. And at some point he started to cough and gasp. And I kind of went into a silent prayer, like, please, creator, spirit, God, whoever, like, don't make him suffer. Don't let him suffer. Please, like, clean his lungs, allow him to breathe, allow him to recover, but don't let him suffer. And while I was like just so stubbornly hanging on to the possibility of him making it, Buttercup stood up, walked over to him very quietly and slowly, started licking his neck and whispered in his ear, it's okay, son. I love you and it's okay to go. And she just kept reassuring him in her selfless, courageous, unbelievably wise way. And she just kept reassuring him and nurturing him and loving him and telling him it was okay to go. And she walked him home. And I had never seen anything like that before. You know, for me, when a loved one passes away, it's a tragedy. It's something that we avoid at all cost. We keep grasping at straws and trying to create possibilities. And she surrendered to what was happening. She put herself and her own emotions to the side, and she was there 100% fully present for her son. And I just couldn't believe it. And so at the Gentle Barn ever since, that is how we walk animals home. And it doesn't matter whether they've died suddenly of a heart attack or they're having a seizure or it's some kind of horrible bloody injury, which doesn't really happen at the Gentle Barn, but whatever, or they pass away peacefully when they're ready, no matter what it looks like. We maintain composure, we reassure, we hold, we groom, we love, and we walk them home like Buttercup. And she changed the history of the Gentle Barn and showed us how to walk a loved one home. Buttercup's story doesn't end there, as I write in my book, Cow Hug Therapy, because around that same time, once she had a chance to really grieve and mourn over the loss of her physical relationship with her son, we had rescued 6 other calves from going to slaughter at 8 weeks old. And Buttercup lost a son and these calves had no mother. And we brought the calves to Buttercup just to see what would happen. And she adopted them all and she nursed them and she raised them and she groomed them and she protected them and she loved them for the rest of her life. And I think that there's so many lessons that Buttercup taught us. I could probably fill a whole book, not just one chapter, about her. But my biggest takeaway is there are sad and challenging and painful things that happen to every single one of us. And like Buttercup, we have a choice to allow our struggles and pain to end us or to take our struggles and pain and pay it forward to gift ourselves to the world. Buttercup could have slumped down in grief and never recovered, but instead she took her milk, she took her motherness, she took her nurturing, she took her love, and she gave it to someone who needed her. And that's what we're all here for. We are all here to take our struggles, to be resilient, to survive, and then take the lessons that we've learned along the way and help someone else.
First of all, thank you so much for sharing this. It's, you know, it's one thing reading it, but then hearing from you, it's like, it just takes it to a whole other level, even more heart than it's already in the book. And I'm so glad that I picked the Buttercup story and Buttercup to dive deep into the wisdom that they pass on. And she's just, as you said, passing on the torch. And what you said about the biggest lesson actually is one of the passages that I highlighted, one of the many. Well, first of all, I wanted to say you shared that your grandmother passed away and then you remembered Buttercup's teachings. And you said, Buttercup taught me that when a loved one is transitioning, my job is to be quiet and reassuring, strong and brave, to hold them, love them, and allow their transition to be magical. And a few pages later, you wrote, I remember what Buttercup taught me about being present for the person passing away and not making it about my own sadness. Can you share with us how Buttercup's teachings guided you to support when your grandmother was on her journey then back home?
Listen, I think it's a tall order when our loved ones are passing away. We feel scared. We feel sad. We feel confused. We feel helpless and hopeless. There are so many, sometimes we feel anger, right? There's so many emotions that well up inside of us when we're kind of helplessly watching someone pass away and we finally come to terms with the fact that there's nothing we can do about it. But that's what Buttercup taught me. It's not about us in that moment. It is absolutely about us once they're laid to rest. We get to mourn their physical loss. We get to really immerse ourselves in that grief and camp out there until we are ready to be on the other side and we can go from grief to gratitude. And it's really important, as a matter of fact, to really feel our grief and feel that loss instead of trying to distract ourselves and move on prematurely. But right there, when that animal or human or anyone is crossing over, it is not the time to think of ourselves. It is not the time to cry. It is not the time to be scared. It is a time to be Buttercup, be selfless and courageous and quiet and nurturing and allow their transition to be beautiful. And I've really come to see, quote unquote, death the same thing as birth. When we have babies, right? When there's a birth, we dim the lights. We are very careful in selecting the absolute choice people to be in the room. We talk in hushed tones and we want the entrance into this world to be absolutely breathtakingly beautiful, right? So I look at the end of our lives the same way. We want the person or animal transitioning to not feel guilty. We don't want them to feel embarrassed. We don't want them to feel scared or nervous. We don't want them to feel worried about how their loved ones are going to fare once they are gone. We want them to feel totally supported, totally reassured, and we want them to know that it's okay to go. And we want that experience to be absolutely beautiful because it is a birth into the other world. And that's what Buttercup taught. And so I remember when my grandmother passed away, you know, it was really scary. She was very, very, very ill. There was nothing that we could do because unlike animals, humans don't have that euthanasia option. And so watching her pass away was just probably the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. And my poor mom was running around, you know, trying to figure out how she could comfort her mother. And it was awful. And I just sat down, held my grandmother's hand, saying to her in a soft tone, told her all the things that I appreciated about her, reassured her that everybody would be just fine and that she can go when she's ready and not be afraid. And it was a tremendous offer to walk her home.
Thank you so much for sharing this. I think whenever we are in the position of being there when someone transitions, it's so good to already have that picture of Buttercup and what you just shared beforehand. Because I do think the instinct is to cry, to be anxious, to try to fix for them not to go. And I think if we can internalize and invite that comfort in our heart for that very moment, it's probably also then going to be there when the time has come for someone we love. And I'm also very grateful that you shared when they did transition, how important it is for ourselves then to grieve. And you also allow Buttercup to grieve. And you wrote in the book, none of us tried to stop her. Instead, we joined her, sat with her, listened to her, cried with her, and held space for her while she mourned. What do you believe helps people to find and summon the courage within to hold space for someone else's grief? Because I think, yes, for our own grief, it's also hard, but for someone else's, it's for some people, it's impossible. They like withdraw, they don't call anymore. They just feel, and simply because they don't know how to sit with the uncomfortable, and everyone has this idea, I need to fix it, I need to make it okay for the other person. And so when you, during that part of the book, I really paused for a moment and I thought, wow, I'm so grateful you shared that, because I think if people knew, all we have to do in that moment is to be with them. It's not about saying the right words. It's not even about making them feel better, because healing happens on its own. And I had Sibby Owens on the show, and we talked a lot about grief, and we also said the most important is to show up.
Yeah. Sarah, I love that you asked that question, because listen, I think in our typical culture, we don't talk about grief and loss enough. We don't really know how to deal with it. We don't know how to support other people. And you're absolutely right. When we see people that we care about suffer, we want to fix it. We want to take it away from them, and we want to fix it, and we want to make it right, and we want to tie it with a pretty pink bow, and we want to make everyone happy. And I think that's another lesson that the animals have to teach us. Animals allow us and other animals to just feel what they're feeling. Like there's no such thing for an animal as like, oh my God, please don't be angry, or oh my God, please don't be sad. One of the reasons why we humans love animals so much is we talk about the unconditional love. We talk about they accept us as we are. We talk about they don't judge us, and they just are happy to be with us in whatever state we are. And what a gift it would be if we could do that for each other. Mm-hmm. And the animals in my life, and also very, very special in my people in my life, have really taught me that the greatest gift that we can do for another that is sad is not make them happy, not fix it, not try to explain it, but to just sit and listen and hold space for them. And that's what the cows do for one another. It's what animals do for humans. And it's what we can do for others if we just forgo and forget our own discomfort. Mm-hmm. And just allow that grieving person to show up the way that they need to, and just hold space for it. Just be there with them. It's such a gift if we can do that for someone else. It's such a gift.
I'm a firm believer it's about the two things you mentioned. One is go moving through our own discomfort. And as you said, similar to actually if someone passes away, it's not about our own sadness. It's not about our own anger or discomfort. Like if loving someone means putting that aside for that very moment. And then knowing it's not about fixing something or making them happy, but actually holding the space and also really reassuring them that they have the strength to hold their heart when it gets heavy. And when it's really heavy.
And you know, I see cows do this time and time again. Cows form circles. I said this in my TED talk. I did a whole TED talk about the circle that happens when someone's giving birth. That we had this experience where our cow Karma, we didn't even know she was pregnant. We rescued her 8 months prior. She all of a sudden went into labor. The entire cow family formed a circle around her and stayed there literally without moving for 2 hours while they watched her labor and birth and watched her, you know, lick and clean off her baby.
Wow.
They form the same exact circle when someone is passing away. They don't sit there and say, get up, please get up. You have to live. They notice that someone is passing away. They form that very same circle around them. And then the matriarch will step forward, put her head on the back of the one that's passing away, stay there for several minutes with her eyes closed, paying respects, saying goodbyes, honoring their loved one. Then she steps back into the circle, and then the next one in the circle, until every single one in that circle was able to stand, to step forward and pay the respects to the one that's passing away. And I have seen many mothers pass away and leaving their kids behind, and the family will form that exact same circle around the mourner. They don't say, get over it already. They don't say, hey, come over here and have a drink of water. They don't say, hey, just eat and forget all about it. They don't say, oh, let's just play and move on. They form that circle around the one that's grieving. They meditate with them. They sleep with them. They sit still with them. There's no words. There's no exchange. There's no negotiation. They are just simply forming a circle around them and being with them until they feel better. And it's beautiful. It's a beautiful practice. And I think us humans need a lot more of that.
I didn't know that. And it's so beautiful, especially giving that feeling, we are here for you when the circle of life is moving. Whether it's beginning, whether it's ending, we are here. And like, we surround you with our love and we hold that space for you while there might be a big hole in your heart. So it's beautiful. Like, I'm so grateful you shared this because I think it's something that, I mean, a lot of different cultures have different practices for when someone passes away. And there are some that have like the most beautiful ones and they celebrate and hold like the grateful memories. So I think, really is nice to also look into the very natural practices and routines of animals. And this also brings me to another chapter. This is not about grief. It's about something else. And I so loved the opening quote of the chapter, Socks. You wrote, never change for anyone, ever. Instead, gather around you those who can love you for who you are. I think it's our life really comes down a lot to who we spend our time with. And if we are conscious of picking people and animals that make us feel good and that celebrate us, that want us to be happy and to be healthy and also to succeed in life. And what are some of your personal experiences when it comes to loving yourself for who you are and then attracting your tribe? Because you mentioned earlier, you created an entire village with people that are like you. In order then to have people around you that love you for who you are and never want you or expect you to change your core.
So I write a lot about this in my first book, My Gentle Barn, where as a kid, I was an animal communicator. I was an animal lover. I wanted to save animals when I found them in distress. And the people at school, the kids at school really didn't share that same value. And so it made me feel a little, it made me feel alone. It made me feel kind of like an odd duck. And by the time I got to high school, that feeling really, really grew until all I wanted to do was be quote unquote normal. And so I kind of twisted myself into a pretzel trying to be like everyone else, trying not to be so obsessed with animals, trying to go to parties and dress like the other kids and, you know, just kind of be like them. And I will tell you that the minute that we deny who we are, it's a slow suicide. It's a slow death. Because we are not here to be like everyone else. We are not here to shut down who we are. We are here to be us. We are here to shine the light that only we can shine. We are here to dance the dance that only we can dance. And so the minute you deny all of that, things are not going to work out, and things in my life did not work out. And so what I write a lot about in my second book, Cow Hug Therapy, is it's the opposite. It's not that we have to change to fit in with everyone else around us. It's that we have to maintain who we are, honor who we are, give thanks for who we are, and then attract around us the people that will reflect who we are. So instead of me trying to be like everybody else, I learned to stay still and say, I'm an animal healer and rescuer. I'm an animal communicator. I'm an energy healer. I'm a vegan. This is who I am. Take it or leave it. And then slowly, slowly, when you really honor who you are, you start attracting people that mirror that. And look, we have millions of fans all over the world mm-hmm. who are cut from the same cloth and love animals the way that we do. And all of a sudden, it's like, oh my God, we're all the same, because I had to stand still and accept myself first.
I just had this picture when you were explaining that, you know, the seeds were sown in the moment you started to honor your gifts and yourself, and then spreading out into the entire world. Because I am a firm believer, we get certain gifts for a purpose, and the purpose is to share them with the world.
Yes.
And of course, for some people, it might not be with millions. For some, it's like with 5, with 10. It's not about the number, but it's, we owe it to our gift for it to be shared.
That's right.
So just so glad that you had the courage to do it, and also to allow yourself to share it in so many different ways. You know, you're a speaker, you're an author, you like sit with the cows, you hug them, you rescue them, you help them to heal. You know, you're an animal communicator. I just think it's so beautiful to see how your gift transforms in so many different areas, and also so many lives, like both of the animals and the humans.
Thank you. I feel very grateful every day.
And I can really feel that. And could you please read one passage of the book on page 198, Whisper, because I think that's very fitting about your journey of honoring yourself and becoming who you are.
I would love to.
Whoops. She's like, totally, this is the right passage. I'm so glad you asked her to do it. Yes, we got to celebrate my mom much more. She's just a rock star.
Okay. All right. In my time with Whisper, I made mistakes and was forgiven. I was weak, but found strength. I was scared and found reassurance. I went from an insecure people pleaser to a mom, founder, and leader. When I was with horses as a child, I felt invincible, confident, and powerful. Whisper brought that feeling back to me and left it with me, returning to me a piece of myself that made me whole once more.
How does it feel when you read that out loud?
Well, I mean, first of all, it connects me with Whisper, so it makes me long for her and remember her. But you know, it's true. We work with a lot of kids that come to the Gentle Barn to heal, and they, through our programs, they're able to find themselves in the barnyard. And one of the things that we ask them when they come to visit is, what is the word that best describes who they are, and what is their dream? And depending on the age and circumstance of the individual, sometimes they know their dreams and sometimes they don't. And when they don't, what we say to them is, well, go back into your childhood. What did you love? What set you on fire? What made you feel like time stood still? What made you feel like you were huge and you could fly? And then they would say, I love to draw. Okay, well, maybe you're supposed to be an artist. Or I love to sing. Okay, maybe you're supposed to sing somehow. When we are small, we know who we are and why we've come. And then we get lost in life's experiences and you know, all the things that we go through and all the things that we're told and blah, blah, blah. and we lose ourselves and we don't remember why we've come sometimes. So with me, and you know, when I read that paragraph, as a kid, all I wanted to do was be with horses. And it didn't matter if I was grooming them, walking them, feeding them, picking up after them, or just sitting staring at them. The smell of the barn, the feeling of their fur on my cheek, the smell of their mouths as I kissed their muzzles, their soft exhalations through their nostrils, their swishes of their tails, the way they interacted with each other, the clip-clop of their hooves. I mean, I couldn't get enough. And when I was with a horse, there was no past, there was no present, there was no insecurity, there was no self-doubt, there was no ridicule, there was no shame or humiliation. I was larger than life and I knew who I was. And then I went through life and I forgot that. I forgot that little girl. I forgot that feeling next to horses. And it was replaced with fear and doubt and, you know, circumstances that made me fear and doubt. And in my time with Whisper, she really returned that feeling to me. She made me feel like that again. And when there are days, because, you know, things come and go, we're still evolving, we're always working on ourselves. So when there are days where those old feelings of self-doubt, whatever, creep in, I sit down and I meditate and I just kind of visualize Whisper's face and the smell of her nose. And it brings that feeling back to me again. I know who I am. I know who I am when I'm next to a horse. I am strong. I am powerful. I am looking forward. I am not worrying what anyone else is thinking. That's what Whisper did for me.
Ellie, I love that you said, and then we forget and it's about remembering.
Yeah.
Because some people are so busy with finding it. And I think when we come to the understanding that it's not about finding it, it's about remembering, it takes off so much pressure. And I'm wondering, like, what you shared. I know you're very busy and you have already done so much good in the world. You have moved mountains. Nevertheless, obviously you're human and you, as you said, you have your days where you also sometimes forget a little bit how amazing you are. First of all, do you see any patterns, what leads to you not being 100% connected with that little girl that feels fearless and like just, you know, greater than life? And also what helps you then to reconnect, maybe other than meditating on Whisper, especially for those in the audience who know that feeling inside them?
You know, I think that when I leave intuition and I go to the brain where you're weighing the pros and cons and you're seeing what you want, but then again, what about this and who's going to, what are they going to say and what are they going to think and what's the circumstance or the consequences of this? I mean, oh my God, like I could be on that little hamster wheel all day long. You know what I do, and this might seem, I don't know, trivial, but it really helps me when I find myself leaving my intuition and my knowingness, because inside of all of us, we know what's right and what's wrong. We know what feels good and what feels bad, right? But it's very easy to kind of leave that and like overthink things. Because the things that I'm doing and the decisions that I'm making are important and they matter. And I want to do it carefully and right. I have come to find that there's a compass inside of all of us. And the compass shows up in two ways, in how we feel, right? So if we feel excited, if we feel elated, if we feel joyous, if we feel relief, if we feel peace or happiness, that's our compass saying, oh yeah, you are right where you need to be. When we're feeling all the negative versions of those feelings, then that's our compass going, when we're feeling depressed, when we're feeling anxious, when we're feeling worried, that's oftentimes our compass saying, no, you are not where you're supposed to be. You are supposed to be doing something different. You are supposed to be doing something that you love, not serving someone else. Like, that's our compass, just letting us know that we are not on track. The other way that my compass shows up is the way that I feel inside my body. When I think of something, or I'm trying to make a decision, or I'm trying to figure out what is right, there'll be a version of it that will make me feel very anxious in my body, and my tummy will feel kind of hard and in a knot. That's my body saying, uh-uh. But when then you think of the right option, and all of a sudden there's a softening in the belly, there's a unclenching of the jaw, your throat feels more relaxed, your chest feels really happy, and that's your body going, yeah, right answer. So we're not taught to listen to those things in the typical school, right? We're taught to sit down, listen, follow the rules, raise our hand if we want to say anything, and listen to all the other experts in the room aside from us. But we have a big voice. We just have to remember how to use it. Our body is our instrument that will never steer us wrong once we realize what our body is saying. And our instincts and our intuition will always guide us once we start exercising the muscle of listening to that still small voice inside of us.
For anyone in the audience who hasn't listened to our first episode with Allie Lex, it's all about knowing whether it's intuition or fear, and you shared so much goodness there. And we were talking even more about our body sensations and how also how we learn to like read them, and also to trust them, to reconnect with them, and also understanding like what connects me with it, what disconnects me with it, like what like is so much noise that I can't hear it. And I'm glad you brought that up again. And I interviewed Dr. Sarah Kuberick, and she had an amazing, amazing analogy. And she said, our body, I'm repeating it in my own words, our body has so much wisdom, and once we start understanding it, it's a little bit like watching TV. First, you watch TV, you do not understand the language. But once you start understanding the wisdom, you get the subtitles. And you're like, whoa, that's what they said? And I think this is really what it is. Like once we start understanding the symptoms, the feelings, the sensations, also maybe differentiating, is it a fear? Is it someone else's feeling? Is it my feeling? Because I think especially as empaths, it's very important to differentiate what I'm feeling right now. Is this mine or someone else's or something out in the world? And also, I guess you, as you're nodding, you really know what I'm referring to. What helps you to differentiate and also be very clear? Is it like something you are feeling, or is it something you're picking up? Because you are surrounded by a lot of people, a lot of animals.
I literally went through this very, very recently, about a week and a half ago. I was going around my merry way. It was my day off. I had a wonderful day. I went to the gym. I walked the dogs. Like, I had the best day ever. Went to acupuncture. It was Friday night. Oh, so tomorrow will be 2 weeks. It was Friday night. I couldn't sleep. I felt depressed. My brain was talking, but my brain wasn't talking about something pertinent to my life. It wasn't like there was a challenge going on or a fight going on or something bad happening. My life was fine. My day was fine. And I was, for 24 hours, I couldn't sleep. I wasn't eating. I was worried and depressed. And I kept saying, what is wrong? I don't usually feel this way. What's wrong? What's wrong? And then all of a sudden at the end of the 24 hours, I was like, wait a minute. Is this even mine? Mm-hmm. I was like, hold on a second. What are they doing out in the world? Are they calling elephants? Are they chopping down the rainforest? Like, what a horrible thing is happening out in the world? Because you know what? I don't think this is mine. And the minute I acknowledged that this wasn't even mine, it's like it released me. Mm-hmm. Wow. As empaths, we not only carry our own feelings, our own emotions, our own experiences, but we also carry those around us, and we also carry the world. Things that we can't see, things we can't hear, things we don't even know about, But if there's an energy out there in the world, we are going to feel it, and it's going to affect us in a very, very, very deep, profound way. And so what I do when that happens is, okay, what's worrying me? Do I have a decision to make? Do I have stress going on? Is this real? And if it's real, then you address it, right? You problem solve your way through it. You make amends, or you make peace, or you make the decision, and then you're released. But if it's not ours, then there's no way to resolve the way through it. We just have to realize it's not ours.
I do the same. So whenever I feel like an emotion, even if it's something small, I'm asking myself, is it mine or someone else's? Like, that's the very first question I'm asking myself. And how I often know it, it's very similar to what you said. I'm like, I usually don't have these thoughts. I usually don't feel like that. And then I know, okay, it's not mine. And what I do, and I do this actually also with my dog, not just with myself, like every evening I'm saying, okay, I'm releasing whatever is not mine to carry. And then I do the same for him. I'm like, he releases whatever is not his to carry, because, you know, like he might also just pick up from me or the neighbor or another dog, whatever it is. And I think like the releasing part is very important. The asking yourself, is it mine or is it someone else's? And I think it's also really important to protect yourself.
Yeah.
And knowing, having a protection layer that allows you to connect and to feel for others, but not to suffer. And I think that's a very fine line. And as empaths, it's probably a lifelong practice and art. But these, I think, are some simple ways which we can practice on a daily basis to really hone our talent and gift of being an empath, and using it as a gift rather than something that's our, something that drags us down because we don't know how to use it.
Yeah.
Ellie, well, I would love to talk about every single chapter, but there I will pick one more. In the chapter of magic, you shared that in your late teen years and early 20s, you wanted to become an actress. Yeah. And you said, looking back now, I thank my lucky stars that acting did not work out for me and that I was able to found the Gentle Burn instead. Just like magic, I thought the glamour and attention would bring meaning into my life. But the truth is that for me and magic, serving, caring, supporting, and giving to others offers a much greater high than applause or accolades any day. Can you share the amazing story of magic? Because that's actually a chapter I laughed. I didn't cry. I laughed. And also, how can we identify if our dreams are ego-driven or led by our hearts?
Well, I think that when we choose to serve, it's never ego-driven. When we choose to serve and give and help and heal, it's never ego, and it's a wonderful, wonderful feeling. But listen, I don't want to come across like I'm saying all actors are bad.
No.
Actors are serving too, right? I mean, I love going to the movies and watching TV and escaping into someone else's story and someone else's life. So, actors and performers are very, very, very important. For me, however, there's a Chinese curse that says, may you get everything that you want. And you would think that that was a blessing, but it's not. It's a curse, because we think we want things. And in the end, we look back and say, oh, thank goodness we didn't get it. Magic's story is amazing. We got him as a little baby. He was very, very depressed, wanted to die. All he would do was stand there with his head on the ground, not looking around, not interacting, not eating. We were very, very worried that he would die. So I kind of sat in a chair in his stall and just kept telling him what his life would look like and loving him and singing to him and reading out loud to him. And finally he chose to live, thank goodness. And I was so excited because I had never raised a baby horse before. So I was like, oh, this is going to be so exciting. He never has to be ridden. He'll have a virgin back. I'll take him for walks instead. He'll have all these horses to play with. He'll get to run free. And he'll work at the gentle barn where all these people come every single day to pay attention to him. Like, what an amazing life, I thought. By the time he was five, he was complaining every time I would pass by. He would go and tell me how angry and upset he was. And I would say, are you kidding me? You have a life that any other horse would just absolutely do anything for. What are you upset about? And he kept saying, do you see how gorgeous I am? Do you see how stunning I am? I chose this body so that I could get the applause of thousands. I want to perform. I want to go to the circus. Like, the circus? I'm not sending you to the circus. So I had 10 years. For 10 years, I tried to please Magic. I think at one point I really did call the circus. I called Cirque du Soleil because they have a version with horses. And they, you know, I was told that they breed their own horses. And then I called movie trainers and I was told that they train their own horses. And I kept telling Magic, like, I'm not going to give you away to some stranger in an ad. I'm not going to do that because I know what can happen to you. And he just kept saying, like, if you don't fix this, I'm going to die. And he ended up in the hospital three times because he kept making himself sick. And so finally, the third time he was in the hospital, I don't think I could, it had been years. And he had a trainer and we took him for walks and we played hide and seek. And he came up with all these tricks to make people laugh and applaud. And he had tours and field trips applauding for him. And he literally had the best life. And I tried everything and I tried everything I could. So finally, the third time he was in the hospital, I called his bluff and I said, you know, I guess if what I'm offering is not good enough, then by all means, go. And man, did that shut him up. He has not complained since. He stopped complaining. He stopped being a brat. He stopped threatening that he was going to die. He stopped getting sick and going to the hospital. And then we had a horse named Andrew, and Andrew had a partner named Patrick, and Patrick passed away. And Andrew was grieving and needed a friend. So I asked Magic if he would please befriend Andrew and take care of him. And he said yes, and he did. And I think that experience of taking care of Andrew and breathing the life back into Andrew made Magic feel important. And then once Andrew was kind of through the thick of his grief and kind of joined the rest of the family, we had another horse named Hero who was going blind. And I said, Magic, she's going blind. She needs a special someone to kind of lead her to the water, lead her to the food and protect her. Will you step up? And he said, yes. And once again, that experience made him feel important and valued and recognized. And he was using a completely different talent and skill set that he had ever even thought of before. And then what happened next was our matriarch had passed away. And so we had a lead male, even though horses are a matriarchal society, in the absence of a qualified female, the lead male will take over. And when that lead male passed away and we still didn't have a qualified matriarch to take over, I went to Magic one day and I said, you took care of Andrew and you did a great job. You took care of Hero and you were phenomenal. What do you think about becoming the new leader? And his eyes got big and bright and he was like, really? You think I can do it? And I said, yes. And I will tell you that leadership does not mean that you get what you want. Leadership means you put others first. Are you ready to do that? And he said, yes. And all of a sudden, instead of causing the fights, he was now mitigating them. And all of a sudden, instead of rushing to dinner and barging everyone out of the way, he was standing back and letting everyone else go to dinner first. All of a sudden, instead of demanding that he be groomed and he get the attention, now he was grooming others. And he became a beautiful, beautiful leader to our herd. And his whole life before he started serving others and he just wanted praise and applause, he would ask, like, I'm so bored. Take me on an adventure. Put me in the trailer. Drive me to a new trail that we've never been with. Like, he was always asking to go somewhere, go somewhere, go somewhere. once he became the leader of the herd, I would say, hey, Magic, what do you want to do on Saturday? Do you want to go somewhere? He said, oh, no, I can't leave my family. And he stepped up to be far more satisfied and happy and rewarded than applause ever did for him, because he found his true calling and his true purpose and his true skill set that he didn't even know he had.
This is such a moving story. What do you think happened in the one moment when you did stand up and say, okay, then you leave? Like, what do you think switched in that moment?
I think he was acting like he was doing me a favor by being around. And he kept saying, you know, if you don't fix this for me, then I'm out of here. And I think the minute I said, well, then go, then he had to figure out for himself what he wanted. And he chose to stay. And I think that when we choose to stay, then life is going to rush in and meet us and support us. And we're going to begin our journey to find our true selves. And it happened for me too. My whole young life, you know, I had a suicide attempt when I was 7. I tried again when I was a young adult. I always said, I want to kill myself. I want to kill myself. I don't want to be here. I hate this place. And all of a sudden, as a young adult, I was contemplating my second and final suicide attempt, when in the process, I realized that I didn't want to kill myself at all. I wanted to be here. And the minute that I chose life, I got off of drugs. I enrolled in school for psychology. I started a dog walking business, which led me to rescuing dogs, which led me to founding the Gentle Barn. It's like the minute that I once and for all chose it, not for someone else, not because I'm stuck here, not because I'm here begrudgingly, but I really once and for all chose it for myself, then life rushed in to meet me and enabled me to find my true purpose, my true calling, and my true self. And the exact same thing happened with Magic.
Thank you so much for sharing this. I'm deeply moved by this, because I do think there are times in life when we're very focused on where we're stuck, on things that are going wrong. And don't get me wrong, there are times when life is really hard and very heartbreaking, and there's so much sorrow. But I also think at times we create that sorrow ourselves. It's a little bit like you, like what you explained with Magic. I mean, he's living his dream, a dream life. Any other animal would love to swap and like in a heartbeat. And he kept complaining. And I think the moment when we actually say, okay, do I want to be here or do I not want to be here? And when we take responsibility and ownership of our life, that's when it really unfolds to be our life. And to that, and this gives us the opportunity to live life on our own terms. And I think only when we live life on our own terms, we can be happy.
Yes. Yes, because the minute you choose life, really once and for all, really, really choose it, like Magic did, and I did, then the next question is, okay, well then, what do I want to do? Who do I want to mm-hmm. be? And then we find those answers in the journey.
I think so too. I read once in the Bible is, when you seek, you will find. Yes. And I do think it's something that can be applied for anything. When we seek, we'll find. When we knock at the door, it will be open. Might not always be the door we want to be opened, but it definitely, that's just how life is. Like I always say, life is my friend. And I think as Louise Hay says, life loves me and I love life. And when we create that circle, what you said earlier, around like within ourselves, like for others, and have that circle of life filled with love, I think that's when we really get to experience the big magic of life. Ellie, we always wrap up an episode with an animal Q&A, and I would love to dedicate that one to Buttercup this time.
I love that.
What is one of the many reasons you're grateful for Buttercup?
Her hugs, her brown eyes that I could drown in, the way that she taught how to walk someone home, her selflessness, her generosity, her kindness, and even the way that she left us and left her body is more of an accurate way of saying that. I mean, what a class act. Mm-hmm. She didn't waste time being sick. She didn't waste time with a long illness or a traumatic event. She woke up in the morning, fit as a fiddle, ate breakfast, gobbled up her cookies, drank the cool, delicious water, groomed every member of her family, meditated, got groomed by the staff. They put her fly mask on. She looked around and she passed away. In a matter of minutes, she was gone. They say that all great masters leave that way. And that is just one more piece of evidence that Buttercup truly was a great master, although I knew that before she passed.
Ellie, if you were to write an entire book about her, what would the title be?
Oh, that's such a good question. Maybe A Cow's Guide to Being an Empath.
I'll be the first one to buy it. And Ellie, what is one of the many reasons Buttercup is sending you to show her presence?
Can you repeat that question?
What is one of the many signs she sends you along your path to say, hey, I'm here?
You know what she sends me? She sends me yellow flowers and yellow birds.
That is so beautiful. And the card I pulled today is all yellow.
Which is amazing. Because that was her. She was yellow. She loved yellow. That's her.
Oh, that's amazing. I love that. Ellie, thank you so much for coming back on our show and sharing even more insights than you already shared in the book. I'm sure it will be an episode that I personally will be listening to over and over again, and I will take notes and also meditate on quite a few things you said today, especially the practice of the cows with the circle. It's something that really deeply has resonated with me, and also how to pass on the torch. Yeah, there have been so many messages for the heart that I want to make sure I invite even deeper into mine. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me and all these wonderful questions and this extraordinary conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ellie. It's a wrap for today, everyone. If you loved the episode as much as we did, please make sure you share it with your friends, with your family, and don't forget to tag Ellie, the Gentle Barn, and us. Send us DMs or emails if you have further questions. And I have a really great news for you. You are going to get a special discount code to get the book on the Gentle Barn website. We'll get 20% off. I'm going to put it in the show notes. Get the book for everyone. I think it's a great gift for anyone you love, a birthday gift, and also get maybe 20 books so you have plenty of Christmas gifts already. And thank you so much for being here. See you next Wednesday.